Welcome to Startup Stereo, the German Accelerator podcast with and for founders, innovators, and change makers. Plug into expert tips, experiences, and best practices around scaling, leadership, new work, and much more. My name is Katrin Grunwald. I'm a coach, mentor, and founder of the Globe Team, a consultancy for team and organizational development. I'm happy to be your host for Startup Stereo, a podcast powered by German Accelerator. German Accelerator empowers high-potential German startups to scale globally. Our guest today is Anna Jona, co-founder of Wildling, a company producing minimal shoes for children and adults that feel like walking barefoot. What started as a good way to balance working and family life with three kids, Wildling has been set up as a remote company from the beginning and now has more than 130 employees, a big majority of them working remotely from their own homes. Anna is therefore the perfect guest to talk about recommendations for working from home. In our conversation, we talk about the importance of a virtual coffee kitchen, of daily routines, of fostering trust, also in a remote company through bi-monthly live meetings. Well, in non-corona times. And we talk about Wildling's creative plan B in case of a total lockdown. To give you a teaser, it involves the decentralized storage of 20,000 pairs of shoes in their employees' garages. As we did this interview from home to home, you might hear kids in the background. But I can imagine that is something that during the corona times we've all come to know, that work and family life have moved just a little bit closer. Enjoy the conversation. Hi, Anna. Welcome to the podcast, and let's start with an introduction of you and your company, Wildling.
Hi, Katrin. Thank you so much for having me. I'm Anna. I founded the company together with my husband in 2015. Wildling is a company that makes minimal shoes. So we make shoes with the concept of as little shoe as possible. And we actually started making these shoes for our own children that grew up barefoot. We lived in Israel for a while. And when we came back to Germany, we saw that the kids needed shoes for the winter and that they couldn't walk as usual with those shoes. So we started designing shoes that would make that possible. And in the end, that's the idea that we came up with. That's how we grew as a company. We make shoes for children and adults today. And it's a really, really interesting project.
What I personally feel really remarkable about Wildling is that you're working nearly as a fully remote company with around 130 employees. So not just during corona times, but in general, how does it work? What are fundamentals that you have established in working together with your team?
Well, that's a good question. We actually started working remote right from the beginning. We had three small kids. I had to work a lot of hours as a founder. And I saw that it was much easier to combine work and family when working from home. So it was just a lot easier to, you know, to work long hours, but be there for lunch together or be there if somebody fell and had to be soothed. When we started employing people because we couldn't handle the workload by ourselves, we employed them from home because there was no office. So that's how it all started. And in the beginning, it was pretty easy because we started employing friends and family, like everybody who couldn't, you know, run away quickly enough when we needed help. Afterwards, of course, it was friends of friends and people that we didn't know. And then things started to become a bit more difficult with the communication and the structure, like the team became bigger and more complex. So we started establishing a few very important steps. We started having meetings in person. So that was actually those meetings, some people really saw each other for the first time. They had been working together for, let's say, half a year, but they actually met each other in person for the first time. So during these meetings, we started defining our vision for the company. Where do we want to get? Why do we do this? Like, what is it that motivates all of us to get up in the morning and to work together? What are our values that would be our guidelines for how to work and how to really take good decisions and in also complex situations? And then we adopted an agile management system, OKRs, objectives and key results, to really keep the company aligned, like to define company goals, to define goals for each and everyone in the company that keeps all of us on track, like in a quite strict framework. And then within that framework, you can really give your employees all the freedom and flexibility that this kind of work allows.
So you mentioned the personal touch, or let's say the personal relationships, which I think are really important, especially if you don't see each other that often. How explicitly do you do it to establish also the trust, I guess?
Well, I think trust is one of the main things you need when working with any team, actually, but especially if you're working remote. And I think trust is really is one of the essentials to forming a good company culture. So we really try to keep flat hierarchies and to really hand over the responsibility that comes with a certain task, like be it like leading a team or, you know, leading a project, like whatever, if you're a specialist in a certain area or if you're really coordinating people. So to really, you know, hand over that responsibility fully so people can really work autonomously. And that's an important part of our culture. So let's say a team lead would be responsible for hiring and also for firing people, which is really important. So we try to, you know, it's really helpful to have that guiding system, to have a vision that we all relate to, that we all identify with. So that really forms our company culture and our values, also the common values that we have, the mutual values that we have. And based on that, it's actually quite easy to find a common ground and to, you know, to commit to certain goals that we really like. All our goals have an added value. It's never, you know, we just want to reach that amount of turnover, or we want to, you know, grow our sales in X percent. So it's more like, what added value do we want to create? So it's also easy to find meaning in the kind of goals that we set. And then based on that, based on the meaning that you have, that you find in your goals, based on the trust that you receive and thus the autonomy that you have, and also based on the feeling that you can develop according to your own personal strengths inside the company, you really can create intrinsic motivation. And that kind of makes it easy also to trust people, because they really love to work. So we really have to rather, you know, keep people from working too much instead of, you know, having people not do enough.
Yeah, it sounds like a very, let's say, inclusive company culture, really taking into account also the individuals as human beings, as part of the mission you have in the world. What are really practical things that have helped you to stay in contact, to, let's say, interact and also manage people? And you're up to 130 employees now. So let's look a bit at structures that you've put in place.
Well, we use certain tools, and we have only a few tools, but we use them a lot. So we have Asana as our virtual office. It's a very large project management tool, and it really allows us to, you know, to stay aligned and to know what everybody's working on, and to, you know, hand over projects or tasks or manage questions and everything that comes up. We also have our OKRs inside Asana. So that's basically the structure, the outer framework for our working sprints. We used to do this like an OKR set for each quarter of the year. By now we're down to each trimester. So we have a bit more time to really focus on those goals. So we work together on Asana. We have communication through Slack, and we use the Google Suite for you know, all working together in the cloud on documents and calendar and everything. So, but basically, those are the three tools that we use: Google Suite, Asana and Slack for communication. So Slack is kind of our ad hoc communication tool. It's more, we can also have a chat there. Like it's kind of our...
Yeah, the social part as well, I guess. I read somewhere that you use it to send gifts or just to have the coffee chat moments virtually.
Absolutely. It's our coffee kitchen. We can all meet up there. We can have a laugh together. We can share pictures or, you know, a funny challenge and then everybody tries out and, you know, post their video. So this is where we have like interaction and fun explicitly allowed, you know, to talk about non-work related stuff. And it's really a good way to get to know people. It's really funny how much you can get to know a person only via, you know, a virtual chat. So we use that, and we also we allow people, you know, to meet up and just exchange knowledge. Like we have this fair learning platform where people can say, okay, I know how to knit, for example, and who would like to have, you know, who would like to do a course? So I'm offering an online course in knitting, and then they meet up or they do yoga together or just meet up for a coffee chat, especially now in this time. This is really helpful. Like some people, you know, are alone all the time in their flats. And then it's just good to see a person, even if it's for 15 minutes and even if it's on your screen, but to have a coffee together and to talk. So we encourage this kind of these kind of things. And we also say, like, we have this rule of it's easy to misunderstand something when you're talking in a virtual way. So we say you have to ask twice how something was meant before you're allowed to get upset about something, because it's so easy to misunderstand.
Yeah.
And we also encourage people to use the emoticons, so you can really understand how, you know, is that ironic, or, you know, is there a laugh or a cheek. Yeah, this is a good way to get to know people, and it's also it's very inclusive, because I think if you're in a big office building, you always have these small groups that form, you know, the people that go to smoke outside together, the people that always have a coffee at a certain time, or that, you know, meet up for lunch. And then very quickly you have, you know, within these groups, you have a certain kind of information that's being passed on. So in a virtual chat channel, this is open to everyone. Like everybody can see what you're talking about. Everybody can, you know, listen in. They don't even need to, you know, some people are more introverts, so they like to read about it and they like to be, you know, included in the conversation without having to say something. So I think this is actually a very nice tool to keep this, this personal relation going. But we also saw, and that's the last point I'm going to make here, we also saw that it's really important to keep the personal contact. So we meet up, like by now we meet up every 2 months, every 8 weeks. We renovated an old house so we can, you know, use it for meetings and also for sleepovers. Like it's a bit of like a youth hostel.
I guess it's a kind of fun outing, so that coming together in person has also the social element of seeing each other there.
Totally. It's really a fun time. And because we don't see each other every day, we're really looking forward to seeing each other. It's kind of an event. Most people have to stay overnight, like either the night before or the day after, because they're coming from far away. And we usually don't fly inside the company. So it's a train ride, and then you need a few hours to get there. And we have a lot of, you know, mothers in the team, and, you know, to go to be out for 2 days even, and to leave your children behind, it can be really, it's kind of, you know, it's, you have to organize everything, but it's still, it's a fun outing. Like you, like, yes, we come together to work, and we do work when we meet each other, but it still is also, it has this social event character of like, I'm out, I'm traveling, I'm by myself, and I'm only getting back home like tomorrow night. So it's fun.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like fun and like a good balance to have this flexibility of working remote, and at the same time, the feeling of feeling a connection to the people you're working with. Talking about, let's say, the last couple of weeks, we're recording this interview now, it's April 2020, and here in Europe, we're really in the midst of the corona times. And I was wondering, for your company who has already been working remote, has been set up remote, what has changed for you over the last few weeks?
Well, we are an online company. We sell mainly online. It's our biggest sales channel. And as a team, we're organized in a remote setup. So let's say our essentials are still running more or less the way they did before, which is a great relief. And I know that's very different for many other companies at the moment. But of course, for us, things have changed too. Like, we had to close our offline sales points, like our showrooms in Cologne and Berlin. We had to organize our logistics in shifts and with like extra measures to, you know, safeguard the health of our employees and to make sure that we can, you know, stay up and running. A lot of people have their kids at home at the moment, which is also quite unusual and also not something that we're so used to as a team to organize, you know, homeschooling and work and a partner maybe that's also at home now all the time. So some people have it easy and it's actually not a problem because the kids are already bigger or they can really, you know, share the tasks with their partner. But some also are not able to work because they have small children and they need, you know, attention all day and the grandparents can't help out. So these are special situations where, but you can see that the team is really working together. So we have some people, you know, that are able to work a lot or can't do their usual job at the moment because, let's say, the showroom is closed. So we have 10 people that aren't working as usual. So they are there and they are offering their time and they are sharing, you know, jobs and tasks now with their colleagues. And so there's a lot of the sense of solidarity and, you know, of just trying to help each other through this time. So,
And I also heard that you took some, let's say, risk mitigation activities when it comes to the shipping of the shoes. Could you tell us more about that?
Yes. Well, one of the big risks that we were facing was that our logistics had to close down, be it because of some kind of a case of quarantine or because of a complete lockdown where, you know, only the really essential jobs could still work. So we were really scared that we wouldn't be able to ship our shoes anymore. And therefore, the only solution we could think of was to say, okay, if there will be a complete lockdown, the only thing we can do is to ship shoes from home. So when, you know, we knew there was going to be a big announcement the next week, and we didn't know what kind of like a government announcement, like regarding the measures that were being taken, and we were really fearing that complete lockdown. So in that weekend, we had a huge truck driving shoes throughout the country almost, I mean, this region, to store it at people's homes so we could keep running.
So that would have been the plan B, to ship shoes from garages?
Yes, that was our plan B. And I'm very happy if we don't have to do it. But yeah, we had that, you know, everything was in place. Like, people just said, okay, I have a garage, I have space for this and that, how many cartons or pallets of shoes. And we have 20,000 pairs of shoes distributed throughout the team. So if worst comes to worst, we can still ship.
So it's not just the employees, also the shoes are remote now. I've also seen that you have expanded your services quite a bit in this time to share your learnings with other companies, so through online sessions, just to share your expertise. And how is this coming along?
Yes, that was, you know, in those times, I think everybody is asking themselves, how can we contribute? What can we do to support, to help? So for us, that was one of the things that we thought, okay, that's a part, you know, that's an area where we have some expertise. We have run a team like remotely for the last 4 or 5 years. And maybe we can share a bit of our best practice to make it easier for other companies or other teams that are suddenly, you know, working in this way. So we thought about, you know, what kind of formats could work. And we found, that an online coaching webinar, whatever, could be the right way. So we're trying this out today, and we have quite a few people that registered for it. And we're just going to share the way, you know, like show how we work, a bit of like best practice, what's working for us. And then we'll have a question and answer session in the end to answer all kind of questions that might come up. So
yeah, maybe as a preview for the Startup Stereo listeners, what would you say are the essentials for someone who's never worked from home before to, let's say, stay productive, stay focused, motivated? What would you recommend there?
Well, we have we kind of have two focus points. One is how to run a team and how to keep your team together when you're suddenly, you know, dispersed and everybody's working from home. I think that's a bit more where we see our expertise. And then there's a second focus on how do you organize yourself at home. And there are actually quite a few people now that are giving also quite good advice on that. And that's also something that we're like, we might focus on a bit more, but then it's probably somebody else from the team who will do this more from the, you know, people and culture team. But what helps me is to, you know, to keep a routine during the day, to get up at a certain time, to organize my workday according to a certain routine that helps me, you know, to have a specific time for answering emails, for having meetings and chats, and then to have a specific time set aside for deep work, like for work that I really need to do that I don't want to be disturbed. And then in that moment, like, let's say if I'm writing an article or something that I really need to concentrate on and that I want to get into a flow and don't want to be, you know, pulled out of the flow every now and then. So then I really go offline, like very, you know, I switch off everything, my phone, I close my browser window and I just work on my document. So that really helps me. And I usually also have one day a week that I try to schedule all my meetings, you know, all kind of calls and meetings and one-on-ones that we have and team chats, you know, with my team. So that's one day. And then that day is only meetings, but then I'm also through with it for the rest of the week. So that's also very helpful. And the other thing is that you, like, when I have a family, so, you know, I don't get lonely here, but I know of a few people who do. At the moment, because, you know, they don't live their regular social life. So I think it's also important to take that into account and to schedule meetings like coffee calls or something with your colleagues to, you know, stay in touch. Maybe to go out for a walk if you're somewhere where you're allowed to do this, you know, to have some time for relaxation and also to take it easy at this moment of time. Like we're all in a very, very strange and unknown and unexpected situation. This has an impact on how we feel, and, you know, we should be more tolerant with each other also. Like, we won't, you know, be our most productive at the moment, probably. You know, we have to deal with a lot of new things. We have to, I think we just have to take it easy also at this moment of time, and to take it easy with ourselves, but also with our colleagues, and to just, you know, take it day by day, step by step.
Anna, you mentioned already your family, and I know that, well, one of the motivations also for creating Wiredling and the shoes are really to support your kids and many kids around the world. And I was wondering, because it's not just your kids who are the inspiration possibly for the product, but also that you are working together with your husband. So it is a real family started business, let's say. How has this journey been of really combining family life and the company, working together with your partner? What are things you can share from that journey?
Well, I think we're very passionate about this project. So that kind of makes it easy to always, you know, give room to this. We did it for our own kids. They were very much involved in the product development and, you know, also choosing colors in the beginning and being part of our photo shootings and sessions. And they really live this too. I mean, they really know a lot about it and they're very interested, and they wear the shoes, of course, and they talk to their friends about it. So it's kind of...
They're like little influencers there.
It's a family business and we all live it also. But of course, it's not always easy, like, especially, I mean, my husband, he is more the visionary. He has the crazy ideas. He works in product development, but only, you know, giving ideas and checking new developments. And also, he always had a very strong vision for our customer relationship. So that's kind of the things that he's very much involved in. But less on a daily basis and more as, you know, somebody who gives impulses and who has a vision and shares it with the rest. And I'm more, I really do the management. So I'm, you know, this is my full-time job, and his full-time job is, first of all, it's kids and home, and, you know, then he's there for guidance. So we have very, very different roles in this company, and this doesn't always make it easy. You know, he comes with a crazy idea, and then I just think about, okay, well, I have to put this into, you know, I have to make this become reality, and, you know, do I really want to do this? And we have a lot of structures now built up. I mean, we have a big team, and this doesn't work anymore on, you know, just an impulse and just an idea, and you know, everybody's going to run in the same direction. This is a team now. And they need structure, and they need processes and clarity and, you know, clear role definitions and everything. And it's not always easy for my husband to understand that. So he's a person that just doesn't adhere to any rule, any process, anything. Like, he's a really, really free spirit. So we have some discussions about this too. And I think it's just important because this is also, it's not always easy. Like, we're both as passionate about this project. And you know, when he has a different idea from me, then we start, you know, struggling about which direction this will go. So it's really important to also keep some time set aside to, you know, just being a family, just being a couple, just, you know, talking about things that are not, you know, not wildening. Especially when you're working from home also, because, you know, work is always there. It's very easy to blend work and life. It's very comfortable also. I really enjoy it because it gives me a lot of flexibility and freedom. But on the other hand, you need to be really careful that it doesn't take over your complete life.
Yeah, it's a very close step sometimes, I guess, from the living room to the office, and you're right there in another world.
Yeah, and I mean, you carry work with you on the phone. Yeah. You have it always there. You know, it's so easy, and it's so distracting, you know, to just, oh, okay, let's just check the last emails that came in, or, yeah, you see, I got a photo from somebody, so I need to check up on that.
And what helps really, you there in those moments to stay focused and say, okay, now it's family time, or now it's mother time?
I'm very bad in this. What helps me is a very strict husband that just tells me, put the phone away now. I don't do it. Not really. It's something that I've been wanting to learn and to do better for quite a long time, and I'm getting better, but I'm not there yet. I mean, basically I should just leave the phone here when I go, you know, to the kitchen to eat with my family, and not have the phone on me, because as my husband says, like, nothing is going to happen if you don't answer for half an hour, and he's completely right. But it's something that you need to be very self-disciplined, and I just love work, so it's very hard sometimes not to work.
Yeah. Oh, that's, I mean, of course, when we talk to founders, that's always what's driving them. And that's what makes, I think, the beauty of having your own company and running it. So I understand. Coming also talking to you as a founder and as someone, you've talked at the beginning already about creating a company culture, creating the vision. What else would you say were really big milestones or learning along this journey of the last 4 or 5 years, where you would say as a founder that have marked the growth of the company and the culture?
Well, this is a difficult question. Let me just think. I think in the beginning, you're extremely focused on the product, for example. I mean, that's like the biggest thing, the biggest project you're working on, and really has to be done right. And we really wanted a unique selling proposition. We really wanted our product to solve a problem, an actual problem. So that was kind of like key focus, is to get that product right and to get it right for your target group also. Like, not to just get it right for yourself, but to get it right for the market out there and to see what really is needed. So it's a lot of product, market fit, target group, branding, and then also very important, you know, we're very customer focused. So building up that relationship with our customers, or rather our community, was also very, very essential. So that's kind of, I think, the key focus in the beginning, and to really get that right, like to be your own brand and to create a world around that brand, to create a feeling more than, you know, than just, you know, a technical function, whatever. So that was kind of the key focus in the first years. And then when you start building up a team, suddenly that becomes like a huge focus too. I mean, it's really basically in the end, it's the team that will, you know, bring you further or not. So to realize that, and it was really funny because I always thought, okay, I don't want to have a team, like I maximum 10 people. Like I can't imagine like working with more people. And I thought it was really, it would be really tough and really hard.
And now you have 130 working together on Wildling.
Yes, and it's fantastic. It's really, I think that's the key focus now, is to really build that team and nurture the team and to find the right processes and structures that make working together easy and fun. To hand over that same, you know, what motivates me most is really that sense of autonomous work, of being able to just, you know, decide for myself what I want to do, when I want to do it, how I want to do it, and to just hand that over and make it possible for other people to work in the same way. I think that's also really a big focus at the moment. And I think one that you should really dedicate time to as a founder, like when you start building a team, that becomes, I think, should become the center focus of what you do in the daily. And yeah, I mean, it was also, we didn't start this company because we wanted to make money. Like it was, of course, we needed something that we could live from. Like we needed to have a, you know, an income and to feed our kids, obviously. And of course that was, you know, one of the things that we wanted to achieve with Wildling, but we never wanted to build up a big company. We never had an exit scenario. We weren't in this for, you know, the money. So when it started working really well and kind of better than we ever expected, I really had a moment of crisis also when I thought, okay, where is this going and why? And, you know, is this actually something that we want? But then I just understood that, you know, Wildling can be a platform to do so much more. Like, yes, we're here to make shoes and we want to, you know, help people to move more freely and, you know, to move really naturally and as if they were barefoot wherever they go. And this has a huge impact on health. Like we get a lot of like customer feedback in that way. So that is still, of course, also a very important thing. But we can do more. Like we can move people, not only move their bodies, but we can move them in their heads. Like we can think of ways to work more sustainably. We can and do it also and show that it can be done and that it makes a lot of sense. We can find more ways to, you know, to work more fairly with each other, like with our producers, with our team, like with everybody that we're involved with. And of course we can, you know, innovate. We can, like, we have an innovative product, but we can keep innovating. So Wildling has become the platform to do all of that. And that kind of, it makes a lot of sense, you know, to do this well. And because when you do it well, you can do more and then you can inspire more people. And then maybe we can, you know, make this a movement instead of just, something that you do by yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Make it a movement instead of just a shoe. I think that's really cool, looking also towards the future. So imagine 10 years from now, like how do you think we will work and live? And also maybe what's next for Wildling?
Okay, yeah, that's a very, very difficult question at the moment when, you know, so many things that we thought were written in stone and, you know, so many plans that we had and things that we were so sure, you know, so certain that they would always be stable in our lives have become uncertain and questionable. So I think, I guess for Wildling, this vision will take us further. We want to become a movement. Like we want to do a lot more than just to make shoes. We have had to put some projects on hold now that I'm very sad about, especially projects that, you know, are like around corporate volunteering and funding nature projects like rewilding and, you know, renaturalizing areas. That would be our big thing to, you know, to tackle as a company, as a team. But this is on hold for now at the moment, but you know, I'm sure we'll get back to that. And concerning work in the future, I think people won't want to work the way most people at the moment are still, you know, still have to work. It's, you know, people drive to work, have to commute at least half an hour, like one way, and then back in the evening. They sit somewhere in an office 9 hours a day, and then they go back home, and somehow, you know, the week passes in the blink of an eye, and you kind of find yourself on the weekend again, and then another week, and then another week, and you're just, you know, in this hamster wheel, and you don't know how to get out, and somehow you just feel like something is wrong. So, and you also don't find meaning in what you do. I think many people really like experience that kind of frustration in their daily jobs. And I think people will be much less tolerant towards that, like will really accept that less, like especially maybe now after, you know, learning that life's not something that, you know, is guaranteed to you, and that the freedoms that we had like are not something that we can, you know, always rely on. I think people want to make, like want to dedicate their time to something that is worthwhile dedicating their time to. And I think that that the models, like the individual, you know, life models will be different. Like, I think maybe you just want to work 30 hours a week, and that should be completely fine because you need more time with your family or for your hobbies or something that you find really meaningful that you want to dedicate your time to, like in addition. So I think we should become more flexible as employers and allow people to, you know, make their own structures, like make their own models of how they want to live and how they want to work. And I think like working remotely is one way, and also with a, you know, with a system that you can commit to certain goals, and then you can just look at the result instead of, you know, checking how many hours somebody sat in front of their computers, to use creativity instead of, you know, just presence of somebody. I think this will be much easier to combine, and I think that will definitely be part of the working culture very soon.
That was actually one of the things I also wanted to ask you with regards to companies and the organizational setup. Do you think there will be much more decentralized structures coming now?
Well, I think what we're seeing at the moment, of course, you know, is a setup that is defined by crisis, and people just are suddenly like find themselves in a decentralized setup without having, you know, built the structures for it first. But I think there's also a good opportunity in just trying out to work this way. I mean, people are finding out that it's actually, you know, as efficient to hold a meeting virtually as it would be, you know, to sit in the office. And people are seeing, I think also that there are results if people work from home. Like people can actually be very, very productive. I think even more productive when they work from home than many would be in a, in an office setup. So you also see that you can hold conferences with people from all over the place or even internationally without having to fly somewhere and to meet up in person. So I think that's actually a good chance to try out new ways of working together, of cooperating. And I think that many will also see the good sides and the, you know, advantages and the opportunities in it. And I think that will also help to create a more, you know, decentralized way of working together, help to create more trust, because people see that actually you don't have to have the person next to you in the office to know that they are working. And it will bring into motion a lot of change, I think.
We're already coming to where it's the end of our conversation. And one thing I ask all the invitees to the podcast is with regards to advice they have received in the past. So in your case, as founder of Wildling, where would you say was the best and also maybe the worst advice that someone has given you?
Well, we had a very interesting session on recession-proofing with mentors from the Accelerated Group that's actually have been through an economic crisis, like the financial crisis or 9/11 or, you know, the dot-com burst. So it was very interesting to get their perspective on how this might develop and, you know, which parts we should really have a very, very close eye on and what to be careful of. I think that was very, very good advice that we got there, and it really opened our eyes to, you know, not be too positive or too optimistic and to really also plan for the very worst case. Regarding worst advice, I don't think I really have a piece of very bad advice given to us. It's just some people will give you some advice that is true for them and for their specific company or setup And that just won't work for you because of your, you know, company culture or setup or goals or vision or whatever. And I think it's just, it's always good to know that, that you will also receive a lot of advice to consider it, but also to be, you know, to just say, okay, that doesn't work for us and I don't have to, you know, take this into account.
Given the experiences you have made now, what kind of advice would you give to a younger self, to your younger self?
Well, I would tell myself to just, you know, trust intuition, to just go by the heart more than the head, and to just to be brave and, you know, to follow your dreams.
I'm sure that goes in line also with your personal mantra of where there's a will, there's a way, right? Or what does that mean to you?
Yes, that's. I think that's true. I think if you really, really want something, and I mean, you don't want it, you know, just for selfish reasons, but you really find meaning in it and you really think that's very valuable, then you should just pursue it. And yes, there will be, you know, there will be problems, there will be obstacles, there will be doubts and questions, and you will have to, it won't be a straight way forward. Like there will be a lot of, you know, curves and detours, and sometimes you have to trace backwards and then, but that's fine. I mean, if you keep your goal in mind, then you will find a way to get there, I'm very sure.
Thank you very much, Anna, for your time and for joining Startup Stereo.
Thank you, Katrin. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you for plugging in to the sounds of founders, innovators, and changemakers. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Startup Stereo, powered by German Accelerator. We would love to hear your feedback to improve the experience for you over the next episodes, and we hope you're as excited as we are for more. If you want to find out more about German Accelerator, follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, or Facebook, and check out our website, germanaccelerator.com.